Welcome back to a special edition of On the Green, WFUV Sports' exclusive golf podcast. And we're wrapping up some major talk that is the US Open. Bryson DeChambeau, he collects his second major victory and his second US Open in the last five seasons, that first one coming back in 2020. And then he takes home the crown this year in 2024 at Pinehurst number two. We'll talk all US Open and, of course, the Travelers Championship of 2024 just kicked off on this day of recording, which is Thursday, June 20th. And lots to go through there. We'll give you some predictions, some sleepers, some faders, and all that fun stuff. But before we get into the links action, how's it going, everybody? Will Talent with Chris Corino and Tucker Austin. Guys, how are you guys feeling? And what's going on in your worlds of golf?
My world of golf has kind of expanded at least this summer. Ironically enough, I worked at Topgolf last summer, and it really turned me off the sport in a lot of ways, just because you're there every day and it's just not a it's not indicative to make you want to just encourage to play more, basically. But this summer now, I found a really good setup with a driving range near me that's really nice and really cheap. So I found myself playing a lot, and then kind of naturally, as you play a lot, you start following the tour. I'm still a bit jaded by the live golfers, so I'm not following that as much in non-major time. Obviously in the major time, I follow everybody, but yeah, the actual tour, ever since we've kind of come home for summer, I've kind of been wrapped up in, and I've kind of been loving the golf over the last 2 months.
Yeah, a great US Open last weekend and another great tournament in the Travelers this weekend. So I've got plenty of golf to watch. In terms of my actual golf life, I got out for my first round of the season at the start of this week. I didn't keep score because I wanted to try and just, like work on the shots, just work on ball striking a little bit. A lot of slices, a lot of hooks, but there's always those three or four shots that always make you come back. And I had a couple nice ones, a couple nice draws, and it'll have me coming back next week.
That's why the game is so beautiful. I did the same thing on Monday, Tucker. I played nine holes, didn't keep any scores, but I had some really solid shots and my putts were getting better and better. And like you said, it keeps you coming back. That's why the sport makes millions of dollars off of anybody, pretty much. But that's what makes it so much fun. The imperfections are so perfect. But guys, let's get right into the US Open. Bryson DeChambeau, the talk of the town. What an excellent, excellent performance from him. Not so much in that fourth round, though. Those first three rounds, a 67, a 69, a 67, and then a 71 in that fourth round really left the door wide open for the number two man, Rory McIlroy, who also has a US Open under his belt. But Tucker, I'll go to you right off the bat. Let's talk Rory before we really get into Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, 3 foot putt, couldn't seal the deal, left it completely open for himself, and then closed the door for himself. I feel like, Tucker, it's been at least 10 years of this with Rory McIlroy, but why can he, from what you've seen, just get over that hump?
I think it's at this point, I feel like it has to do somewhat with personal conflict. We know that earlier this season there was an issue where Rory almost got a divorce with his wife, but then that smoothed over, thankfully for Rory. But he's also been the poster child of the PGA Tour in their war against LIV for basically since LIV was established. And I think it's just been a lot of pressure on him. Not to say that LIV was a problem like 2, 3 years ago when he was still not winning majors, but it certainly is now. And I think that is a part of the reason why Rory decided to take a few weeks away from the game after such a painful loss. I mean, I have the word pain here in all caps in my notes. There's really no other way to describe it. Just a painful, painful experience to have such a great fourth round, too, to put himself in position with four birdies through holes 9 through 13 on Sunday, and then just to lip out from 3 feet on 18. That shot would have sent it to a playoff, but still, just to miss an opportunity and be so close like that. it's got to weigh on his mind. And I'm sure every time he doesn't win or doesn't win a major, it just adds to that weight.
Yeah, the devil is not in the details when it comes to Rory McIlroy. He's meticulous. He is so detail oriented when it comes to every even round he plays, and it doesn't feel like he's taking any shortcuts or anything like that. And maybe that's where the struggles come from. And also, I think in general, when you look at whether it's the issues with his wife or even live PGA situations, I feel like both of those also weren't in play for the last 3 or 4 years where he hasn't been winning a lot. I feel like in general, the last 3 or 4 years, this has become a thing in the golf world where Rory will come as close as he did this weekend. And now it's a narrative of why didn't Rory win? And we have to come up with this grand reason for it. When really, if you look at this tournament we just watched, this US Open, two or three shots over the weekend and he wins the tournament. Like it's not like anything really. And honestly, for a guy who's as meticulous as I just described him in the beginning, to miss a putt like he did, it's a freak accident, like a freak accident. Like it isn't even anything you can quantify or fix or practice. It's just a freak accident. So I wouldn't really go, trying to create any grand conclusions about this necessarily, because one shot difference and, maybe he wins the tournament. But also, kind of looking at the overall pattern of the last 3 or 4 years, it just shows that whether it is kind of a neurological issue or it's simply just bad luck, there has been a very strong trend over the last at least 4 years that Rory has not been that champion excelling player that he was when he bursted on this scene as kind of this superstar to take the throne after Tiger, which was kind of the position he was in when he bursted on the scene, which people do tend to forget.
Yeah, he was in all those commercials. He had those major titles at such a young age. And then since then, has not been able to capitalize on that big moment. And Chris, I think you're absolutely right. It could be a neurological thing when you get to that kind of a stage with the kind of gaffes that we've seen Rory have over those last 10 years or so. A 3 foot putt, I've seen it at least 20 times at this point. And the best way that I can describe that final stroke on hole 18 there was it was all in his head. I mean, 3 feet out, just get rid of the nerves, get rid of the thoughts. Don't really think about all too much of the movement, even though the break is very important, but you're that close. Sometimes just go right at it, man. Just go right at it. And it looked like the way that he just lined that entire putt up, he just thought a little too much about it and it lipped out on him like that. So, that's the thing with this game though. It's a lot up in people's heads, no matter at what level that you play at. And Rory definitely, at least in my eyes, showed that on that final putt. Let's just go through his full US Open, which really was not that bad. Like you said too, Chris, he had opportunities in earlier rounds. Forget round four. He played pretty well. But let's go back to round two. Well, first, let's start with this. A 65 in round one. Great start out of the gate. Round two, a 72. Then back-to-back 69s to close it out. I want to zone in on that round two 72 because there are some shots here on his scorecard that I'm scratching my head at. A huge, huge bogey on the par three on nine to wrap up his front nine, and then pars 10, immediately bogeys 11, and then bogeys 15. So there's three bogeys right there. But to me, that bogey on nine is crucial. You're going into your back nine, grooving. He was pretty much, let me just take another look. Yeah, all pars, one birdie on the par four, three.
And to your point, Will, like that's what I'm saying. Like that little putt that's going to get shown a billion times on TV is a third of the importance of those three bogeys that you just talked about.
Absolutely.
Like those bogeys are just so much more important. And that's where the game really is. And that's really when you really start to get into why things start to happen instead of just what happened. That's when you really start to see where the game is won and then, or where the match is won and then where the match is lost in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there, and I'm looking at the rest of his scorecards, and it just gets a little bit worse and worse. Three more bogeys on that third round, but then four. He had four bogeys in his fourth round. So once again, like Chris is saying, open opportunities for Rory, not just because of Bryson DeChambeau for his own play. Those four bogeys in round four, just not going to get it done. A six on the par five, a four on the par three on 15, a five on the par four 16, and a five, obviously, to close out his US Open on the par four 18. But still in round four, collected five birdies, still not going to get it done. The bogey bug bites Rory McIlroy enough times to not seal the deal once again. But I want to switch over now to a couple other guys that not so, I guess, prevalent like the Rory discussion here, but still some head scratchers. Tucker and I were talking before the show about Tony Finau, and that's a name I want to bring up on his play at the US Open in 2024. Finishes top three, tied with Patrick Cantlay, another name do want to get into, but guys that had opportunities once again to really, really show their stuff. And Tucker, a 68, a 69, and then a monster 72 for Tony Finau. I feel like Tony Finau is another one of those guys that, to mention a guy that we were also talking about pre-show, Ricky Fowler, that his name is up there all the time, but once you see it up there and we're in round three, I'm not too sold that the job is going to get done.
And more
And
Kawa, and also just before you go, Tucker, more Kawa feels like that guy, at least what Ricky kind of was in that role, where it just feels like every tournament you look, he's in that top five, but none of them he is at the top of the list. It just feels like there's just some sort of major consistency to him, which is a big positive, but then some sort of crumbling, which is obviously a negative.
yeah, so Tony Finau solidly makes the cut going into the weekend, but I think if we can really narrow it down to hole 13 in round three, he puts up a triple bogey. And in a tournament like the US Open and the way it was being played last weekend, a triple at any point in the tournament is a death sentence in terms of competing for the top of the leaderboard. He still managed to recover and tie for third with Patrick Cantlay because of an eagle on five in the fourth round. Huge, huge recovery eagle, but that's all it is. That's all it gets to be, a recovery eagle. And he winds up tied for third. We talked about Patrick Cantlay too, tied with him. He also had a 65 in round one alongside Rory, just a blistering, blistering first round, but he completely cools off the rest of the weekend with 71, 70, and 70 to finish it off. And I think it just that speaks to the difficulty of Pinehurst. It played so, so hard for all of these golfers this weekend, and many of the golfers just started to stagnate after like solid performances in the first two rounds. They've started to sit near or above par for the rest of the weekend. And I know it sort of became like a buzzword all weekend for the tournament, but those inverted saucer greens. Those
Yeah.
greens are so hard to hit. They are so hard to putt on. And if you're not Scotty at his best, it's probably going to take two or more putts to drop the ball in the hole.
And you know, they're obviously fast. All the tour greens are going to be fast, but if you really take it a step further, it was more than the speed of the grain on those greens. It's really the contours in general. I was watching a video on the Wednesday before the first tee times on that Thursday. And this guy just simply picked up a ball and dropped it on the front of the green, and it rolled all the way to the back and past one of the greenside traps on whatever hole it was. I want to say it was six, but it's not just six. It's every single green designed on that course. You know, it's just extremely impressive how some of these guys can really just tuck those shots on to the green, not just near the pin, but let them sit on the green. It was pretty incredible. There were some shots that Bryson took that skipped, you know, a ways away, but he still came out on top. I guess played the greens the best of anyone, if you want to put it that way. But
And just because you kind of getting into the world of just one of the points I wanted to make, talking about Bryson, the most poetic part of the entire weekend is that he talks about when kind of trying to articulate how easy something is kind of compared to the expectation of it. Kind of like when you see a guitarist talk about how a slow song with a lot less notes might be harder because you have to sing at a different melody than what you're playing at, so it does kind of become tough. Similar thing with golf. A shot that is maybe 200 feet out in a bunker might actually be an easier shot than the shot that's 30 feet away. And it may look like it's easier, but actually it's a lot harder. And Bryson said, this bunker shot behind me, I would much rather take than the 60-foot bunker shot that's, right in front of the green. And that's how he wins the tournament. And that's the signature shot of the tournament. And honestly, the signature shot of his career. There's something so poetic about, his kryptonite and where his self-doubt was coming from ended up kind of being his most shining moment. I think there's something so poetic about that.
I didn't get to watch a ton of it live, but from what I did see, I was pretty impressed with how Bryson played in the fairway bunkers specifically. And yes, with what you're saying, Chris, I think at Pinehurst number two, you would rather have a fairway bunker shot than a greenside bunker shot, because if you just get it out of the trap and then onto the green, it could potentially roll into another trap or completely off the green, and you're still chipping your way on to the green. Those greens were serious, serious design, all the way around. And one last thing on Tony Finau, to what you were saying, Tucker, obviously the triple, but I think what instigates that triple is just the regular bogey on 12. He did not open that back nine up well whatsoever in round three. Two pars to start, but he birdied the par three nine, and then opens up with two pars. One over, then that triple. Just his round three was kind of a nail in the coffin for Tony Finau, but still a top three finish. Can't complain about that. And then very briefly, want to talk about his running mate there, Patrick Cantlay, also a top three finish. But as you're saying, Tucker, a 65, then he can't even break 70 in the following three rounds. But that second round, once again, it looks like the second round for a lot of guys here was kind of the X factor as to why they finished where they did. Patrick Cantlay, two bogeys, one double bogey, and that double bogey on eight, the par four, which he got a six on, another just killer, killer hole for Patrick Cantlay. He then bogeyed 12 and 16, had a few birdies in that second round as well, but once again, in round three, opens the scoring with a bogey, finishes his front nine with a bogey, pretty clean in his final back nine. But then round four, it must be the even rounds. Two and four for a lot of these golfers, it was just not that great. Cantlay with three bogeys to finish his weekend in the US Open. So another guy that can't really close the deal as much as you'd like him to, and he kind of played up there with Tony Finau. I mean, they did finish in the same spot there. One last guy I do want to mention. I was pretty surprised because I was reading a lot about him being a pick to watch out for, not necessarily to win, but that's Ludvig Åberg. Ludvig finishes tied for 12th with Sergio Garcia, and is one over after shooting a 66 to open and then back-to-back 73s. So I was a little bit surprised in Åberg's play there, but Tucker, back-to-back 73s of all the guys that we're talking about right now, that is very glaring.
Åberg got bit by the same bug that Finau was bitten by. He also tripled 13 in round three. I thought that was really interesting. They both did that, but Åberg did not manage a recovery eagle. He actually tripled again in round four on the second hole. So a triple that late in the third round and then that early in the fourth round is even worse of a nail than Tony Finau's triple. And we've seen Ludvig Åberg be able to sort of move on from his mistakes that he makes and really just turn the page in a mature way for someone his age. But this was one of the first times that we've seen him kind of not be able to recover from those mistakes. And the result is a one over performance on the entire weekend and a tie for 12th. But despite that, I don't think Oberg is really going away anytime soon. Ever since the Masters, I've been saying that Oberg is going to be hanging around, and I certainly think he would be up, probably battling for top 10 again this weekend at the Travelers.
Yeah, I mean, anytime, I mean, obviously he's been around, but anytime there is even slightly an emerging of a star or even just a consistent top five, top 10 player, it's nice, especially when they're international as well. It just kind of adds a kind of diversity to the top of the roster. And honestly, we've seen it with a bunch of other players, but with a niche place like Sweden, not niche, but just somewhere that's not a world power, it really kind of brings that country to the sport as well. And I know Sweden has a golf past, but now in the present, I don't think they've really had stars that can really propel their country in a way. And especially with the whole Ryder Cup kind of aspect to it as well, it's kind of a whole slam dunk for the PGA for sure.
And one final guy that I want to talk about, and then we'll talk about DeChambeau a little briefly before we hop into the Travelers, this week's PGA Championship Tour event. But Scottie Scheffler, though, tied for 41st within 8 over. I was really, really surprised. He was tied with few guys here: Frankie Kapan the third, Harris English, Jordan Spieth, Tommy McKibben, and well, there's a bunch of names. I can't even get to all of them right now, but there's a bunch of names in that slot. And Scottie Scheffler, definitely not a name that's normally down there, but didn't have it this week. Once again, a lot of scoring here. I'm looking at the scorecards. No birdies in round two, a huge double on the par five in round two. A lot of bogeys. Didn't get his first birdie until, or I'm sorry, he had a birdie in round one. He had two birdies in round one. I looked at that wrong, but no birdies in round two. Then got a birdie on eight, excuse me, in his third round. So kind of a lackluster weekend for Scotty. Oh, and okay, so I wasn't far off. No birdies. Once again, those even rounds, round two and round four for Scottie Scheffler, zero birdies whatsoever. So a little surprised once again, as I said, with Scottie Scheffler's play, number one golfer in the world, especially coming off that Masters. But obviously, everything that had ensued after then, a lot went down for Scottie Scheffler. But still, you can't. I'll spoil it right now. He's the leading favorite, at least going into the day, into today, with some pretty crazy odds going into the Travelers at 4-1. Nobody else was like even remotely close. If I remember correctly, I think Xander Schauffele was the closest to him in terms of odds, and he was like, I don't know, 12-1. And Scotty's at four. But yeah, last for the US Open, Tucker, Scottie Scheffler, what went wrong? What did you see went wrong for Scottie Scheffler? Because that eight over is pretty glaring for Scheffler.
Scotty finally looked human with the putter in his hand. For the first time in months, Scotty Scheffler could not get it done with the putter. I remember one clip in particular where I think he missed like a 10 or 12 footer and just kind of spun his putter in the air on the green. And you could just see the frustration in his game. And there was, see, he narrowly avoided a nuclear meltdown. He made the cut on the number. After the second round, he actually almost missed the cut, which would have been insane considering he was the favorite going in and is now the favorite for the Travelers. But you mentioned the fact that he's the favorite. I think it actually speaks to his ability to recover that he is still favored to win the Travelers. And I think that also tells me that this eight over is sort of a one-off for Scotty, and you can see it already with the Traveler scores, not to get ahead of ourselves, but he is sitting at five under after the first round. So clearly he has moved that US Open performance out of his mind and has moved on, but just a really, really weird performance for a guy who is world number one.
Yeah, I think I think golf is a world, and I think golf is a sport that you can't really dominate for 365. It's not a sport that you can be the champion of for a full year. Every other sport is like that. Golf is not. Obviously, as you just said, the Travelers odds is the one you brought up, right? The Travelers odds and him being at the top of them just shows that dominance, but also this kind of lower, I would say, quality or lower level performance also just shows the nature of the sport, not really the nature of the man necessarily. And Scotty has been great, and I do think maybe older generations than us have kind of been privy to the dominance of Tiger, and that's like a 365 a day kind of thing. And golf just isn't that way. And yes, Scotty in a lot of ways is Tiger-esque, but when it comes to just doing it for that long of stretches, that's not even really a human kind of thing, and not really anything you could ask for a human to do either. So I do think Scotty had a bit of an anomaly with this round, but it's nothing to be worried about at all.
Well, Rory McIlroy, Tony Finau, Patrick Cantlay, Ludvig Åberg, and Scottie Scheffler definitely didn't live up to some of the predictions for the U.S. Open as Bryson DeChambeau takes it home. And let's just talk about Bryson pretty briefly here. Excellent start. 67, 69, 67. Round four made it a little dicey with a 71. But in that third round, six birdies, unbelievable. Came out of the gates swinging on his back nine in round three, back-to-back birdies, followed by two bars and then pars, and then another birdie. Closed 17 out with a birdie and then a par on 18. But just briefly, for both of you guys, I'll start with you, Tucker, once again. What was it that really impressed you and kind of took home this second major for Bryson DeChambeau this past weekend?
I think it had to be the short game for DeChambeau. It's not something that we have seen often from him. He's definitely been known as the big hitter for a long time, and he did lead the tournament in yards per drive just ahead of Rory. But it was his short game that really made his tournament. Look particularly to that 18th hole in round four, where he had to make a par save out of the bunker, and he got up and down. He got the job done when Rory couldn't get the job done on a 3 foot putt. And that was the difference for him. Like, just in that hole alone, his short game allowed him to not go to a playoff against Rory McIlroy. And that short game it stayed consistent through the rest of the weekend. So, just a great performance from DeChambeau with the big stick, a great performance with just around the green and getting it done with the putter. It was a complete performance and a deserving second major title for Bryson DeChambeau.
I agree with everything you said. Obviously, Tucker takes a little bit more of a X's and O's analytical kind of perspective than I do necessarily. Just kind of from a storyline idea perspective, Bryson comes into this tournament obviously with all the assets to win. I think that he has that in common with a lot of guys in the pool. A lot of these guys are definitely have everything it takes to do it. I think even a guy like Max Homa, who's not even in the picture, I think he could easily win any of these Masters or any of these majors when he wants to. Bryson could do it. He always could. Now, he finally, almost in kind of a way where the Celtics were saying this when they won, and Jaylen Brown was like, "We finally graduated." Feels like Bryson has now graduated to his level, his tier that he is meant to be at. Bryson always was kind of meant to be one of these guys fighting to win majors year in and year out with his counterpart Brooksy. But now it really feels like he has finally kind of come onto the scene and emerged himself. Because it always felt like with whether it was Koepka or Rahm, that was the group that wins them. And guys like Bryson, they're the ones who kind of create all the kerfuffles and all the drama. Now it feels like Bryson's kind of almost taking control of his own destiny in a lot of ways. Obviously, as I said before, that chip shot and that bunker shot, really poetic for everything in Bryson's career up to this point. But yeah, Bryson and just in the eyes of fans as well, kind of done a complete turnaround on the field or on the grass and off the grass as well.
Definitely couldn't agree more. Just a much more complete golfer, aside from what he was always really known for, the big power hitter, and he still was able to do that. Bryson DeChambeau, the 2024 US Open winner. Well, now to get back up to speed with where we're at on the PGA Tour, it's the Travelers Championship of 2024. 24 at TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut, the host of this very tournament since 1991. And today, the first round of the Travelers kicked off, and Tom Kim leading the charge, 8 under the 62 in his round one. Ricky Fowler, Will Zalatoris amongst four, or it was a pool of four, tied in the second spot with 6 under. Scottie Scheffler in a tie for six with Cam Davis, Tony Finau, Patrick Rogers, and a few others, 5 under, as well as Xander Schauffele. Hideki Matsuyama tied for 13th with Wyndham Clark. Colin Morikawa also 4 under. So good day for the Travelers Championship. Lots of broken 70 scores throughout the top 40 players for this weekend. But Tom Kim leading the charge. Tucker, 8 under, a great first round for Tom Kim.
Oh, an incredible first round. You really couldn't ask for a better start. And I think you mentioned a lot of the low scores. It's almost like a shock to the system after watching the US Open with all like the winning score was only 6 under, and there weren't a lot of guys like even near there. It was tended to be near like 2 under. But now first round and you're looking at like most of the field is at least 5 or 4 or 5 under. And the scores are only going to get lower. And this is how the Travelers goes. You always get guys up near, like, approaching 20 shots under par by the end of the weekend. It's just a lot of great opportunities for birdies, holes in ones, eagles, all over the place. It's a really fun tournament. And Tom Kim comes out of the gates firing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, as I kind of made a similar point talking about the US Open, I don't love putting a ton of weight in the first day. The second day of any golf tournament kind of feels like game five of a seven game series. It just feels like where everything kind of happens. But obviously, yeah, to all the points and to like all the themes that Tucker talked about. But obviously, I also wouldn't take away from anyone not playing well either necessarily. As we saw just 2 weeks ago, you can, even if like Tony and other people, you can go one way, people could easily go the other way. I do think golf people usually do think who is going to slide off and don't think who is going to jump up. And a lot of times, especially with a tournament like this where it's a bit of a hangover, a bit of a layover after a big tournament, you just never really know. I would just kind of keep all options open.
Yeah, all options open indeed. Absolutely, Chris. It's definitely one of those kind of tournaments. Obviously, not a major, but always a fun event to follow, usually right after the US Open. So, just to go through the betting favorites, it's going to be Scottie Scheffler, as we were saying before, leading the pack at 4-1 odds, followed by Xander Schauffele, who is 15-2 odds. That is a huge drop right there. Scottie, definitely the clear-cut favorite by a long shot. Ludvig Åberg, 16-1 odds. Colin Morikawa at the same. Victor Hovland rounding out the top five at 22-1 odds. Then there's Patrick Cantlay at 25-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 28-1. Sam Burns and Tony Finau, 35-1. Same with Justin Thomas as well. Also a golfer that has kind of, what's the best way to put it? I guess not at the same stature as he once was, but
The fall off needs to be studied.
the fall off needs to be studied. That's the best way to put it, I think. There it is. The defending champion, this was pretty surprising to me, but then today, obviously Vegas always knows a little bit more than all of us. It's usually how it goes. Defending champion Keegan Bradley at 55-1 odds. And as I said, it's always in Cromwell, Connecticut. It's been like that for over 30 years now. So you think that they'd give Keegan Bradley a little bit more love. 55-1 odds, shoots 1 under. So nowhere near the top there. A 69, good score to start, but definitely towards the bottom there, tied for 33rd. A bunch of guys in that 33rd spot. Keegan Bradley, though, and it makes it kind of tough, especially with Tom Kim at a 62. You're really going to have to shoot lights out tomorrow. And you're already 7 strokes behind the leader, but I think we should just get right into it, especially because we're already a day in. We'll go with our winners, our sleepers, and our fades. We'll also give a prediction as to who we think will make the cut. That kind of goes into the sleeper kind of category. So we'll break it down this way. We'll go make the cut, sleeper, fade, and then our winner. Tucker, I want to start with you. Let's go with our make the cut sleeper for the Travelers Championship this year. Who do you got?
My make the cut guy is going to be someone that Chris actually mentioned before, and it's Max Homa, who came in even after the first round, which is just, it's well behind the lead, but I think he can make up the ground. Chris, you were saying it really is like any weekend that he decides to, he can be one of the top players on the PGA Tour. And I think he will be able to turn it around as the weekend goes on, maybe just trying to shake off some jitters. I mean, with four guys shooting 6 under and Tom Kim shooting 8 under, even looks a little shaky. But for the sleeper, I went with Victor Hovland at 2 under. He missed the cut at the US Open. And I think Hovland is back with a vengeance this week, and he's going to find another gear tomorrow and roll that right into the weekend and compete. I think Hovland might find himself in the top 10.
Yeah, I think, well, if I was to just make a blanket pick for this tournament, I just feel like Zalatoris has the magic right now. I don't know why, but I maybe because he's one of my favorites, but I just feel like whenever he's even in a sort of competitive situation, I just feel like picking him is always just, it's just a way to not look stupid in a very easy way. Because Will usually make you look good, especially later in the tournament. He won't win a lot of the tournaments, but he'll make you look good with some leaderboard placement. A guy that I kind of look at, and I was kind of looking in a similar place around the even kind of spot, but then kind of I look up as well. And a guy who's one of my favorites, and a guy at 3 under right now that I think could win this tournament in a major sleeper way, is my boy Tommy Fleetwood. We've seen Tommy; he has been caddying for his nephew at different golfing tournaments, and overall, Tommy is just a fantastic golf personality. He's sitting at 3 under right now, which is definitely better than maybe he was expecting to be at. Not the actual score, but just where he is in the leaderboard is maybe a little higher than he was expecting. I'm kind of seeing maybe I want to see if maybe some of that confidence and some of that maybe some added confidence that he has from where he is right now will transform him to maybe make a push toward the top. I can see it. Tommy has all the physical abilities, similarly to how I talked about Bryson with the Open. He can do it if he wants to, and I can definitely see it as a sleeper for sure. And also, I know I didn't answer your question, Will. For the cut, Lowry is 1 under right now. He will make the cut, even if it looks a little weird. That will be my cut guy, sleeper to make the cut, even though he probably will, regardless.
So for my sleeper make the cut guy, I do have two separate ones. They usually go hand in hand there, but I don't know. I felt like it was a little bit tough looking at the field. I'll go with my sleeper, and we're doing this after round one. I had Harris English, and he goes even today. Kind of tough. The reason I like it for Harris English, putt game pretty solid as of late, and he plays historically. He's played the Travelers really well over the last 4 years. Got a victory in 2021. He's had top two, excuse me, four top 25 finishes at the Travelers. And I had him as a good look sleeper, but as we keep saying, it kind of looks a little bleak now just because you go even. I mean, that's some tough ground to make up. You're gonna really have to shoot the lights out tomorrow. So, a kind of a sleeper turning into a fade, and then I guess my make the cut, my other make the cut sleeper guy. I got Hideki Matsuyama, who I think could definitely make some serious noise. 4 under right now, tied for 13th. Good spot to be. 6 under if he continues to play like he did today with a little bit more juice on. He also did not play that bad in the US Open. He's getting a little bit going here. I could see it happening. And I think Matsuyama is also due for another tour victory. So we'll just have to wait and see. The sleepers and the make the cuts usually are kind of tough, but sometimes You do land those picks, but let's move right into our fades. I'll go right back to you, Tucker. Who are you fading for this Travelers Championship?
We talked about it a little bit before we started recording, but I think I'm going to fade the entirety of second place after the first round. Between Akshay Bhatia, Ricky Fowler, Kurt Kitayama, and Will Zalatoris, I don't think any of those four will be in the conversation by the end of round four on Sunday. And not from their play being poor necessarily, but just from a lack of consistency. Like we have, like maybe Will Zalatoris is probably the only name up there that has been like sort of near the top recently. And I think these guys had a really, really hot round one, but I don't think it'll move forward into the rest of the weekend. So fading Bhatia, fading Fowler, fading Kitayama, and unfortunately fading Willie Z.
For all the reasons earlier to our Scotty conversation, I'm gonna fade him. He's playing well enough right now to stay in conversations and to kind of stay in people's heads as this tournament prolongs. But I'm here to tell you this is an off weekend. This is an off competition for Scotty Scheffler, and I would not put any sort of merit, and I definitely wouldn't put any sort of money in him right now. And yeah.
I think that's a really solid pick too, with Scottie Scheffler being a fade option here, because I think he'll definitely be a lot stronger than he was this past weekend at Pinehurst number two. But I think that eight over is, and not eight over, but this the score that he had was just enough to be like, all right, he's gonna need some time to figure it out again. He will get there. Obviously, he's a Masters winner this year. A whole year left of playing golf for this year. A lot of tours, a lot of competitions still to go. But I like both of those picks. I think for myself, I am gonna go with Ludvig Åberg. I was just really disappointed in how he played in the U.S. Open. 3 under today, so a respectable score. Tied for 18th with Denny McCarthy, Tommy Fleetwood, and a bunch of other guys. Wow, there are a lot of guys tied for 18th right now. But 3 under, I just, you know, that, like I said, respectable score. I think it's tough to reach a little bit higher up than that. And like I said, I really was not impressed with how Åberg played the US Open. I think that kind of carries over into this weekend. So a little bit more time on Åberg to get a W or even a top five finish for that matter. But I will definitely take Ludvig Åberg as my fade for this weekend. But finally, before we depart, let's hear the predictions for our winners at the Travelers Championship this year. Tucker, once again, right back at you. Who are you picking to take home the Travelers this year?
He's been knocking on the door for a few weeks now. Some would even say months or maybe even years. And it's Mr. Colin Morikawa. Just a third place finish at the Masters. He puts up a second place finish at the Memorial last the weekend before the US Open. And not a incredible or not a great performance at the US Open, but he sits at 4 under after the first round at the Travelers. He's in solid position to challenge the top of the leaderboard at only 4 shots back of Tom Kim. And I think this will be the weekend where Colin Morikawa finally puts some things together. And my roommate is from Connecticut. He's going to be at the tournament this weekend. He's a huge Colin Morikawa fan. So I'm also a little bit rooting for Morikawa just for my roommate to get to see a cool moment.
I have a also have a roommate from Connecticut that will be at the Travelers this weekend. Ironically enough, he's a big Cam Smith fan. He is upset that he left the tour. But I am picking, as I said before, Will Zalatoris. He's the caddy from Happy Gilmore. He is a fan favorite in so many ways. More than just his attachment to a random fictional character, he's just pleasant. I think the best word to describe him is just pleasant. As Tucker, I kind of alluded to earlier, he's really played well recently, found himself in really good positions in a leaderboard, and kind of for similar reasons to the Morikawa pick. I just think he's due, and it just feels like after a big tournament like the US Open and a hangover tournament like this one, it just feels like either a guy like Zalatoris or Morikawa will finally get their kind of defining moment of their career. And I think this tournament, even with it not having the prowess or the prestige of a major, can really be a stage for a really signature moment in your career at any time.
Chris Corino loving the Will Zalatoris love this weekend. I don't blame you, man. I think that's a good pick. But Tucker, the reason I'm not shouting you out just right now is because I'm going with you right now. I'm going with Colin Morikawa as well. I think Zalatoris and Morikawa, not just because we picked them. I think those are genuinely solid picks for how both of them played today. And with what both of you guys are saying, essentially, both of them are due for some kind of victory at some point. I could honestly see it going either way there. I'm going to stick with Morikawa, though. And I really, really liked how he played today, even throughout the entire front nine. Very respectable. Got to get it done somehow. But then he really tore it up on that back nine. And that's a great way to go into your next round for Friday. Immediately kicks off 10 with a birdie, then goes back to an even par there. Excuse me, not goes back to an even par there, but birdies 10, pars 11, then birdies 12 and 13. Bogey put him back to two under, but then another birdie and to finish out three under today. But I like those picks, guys. I think it's going to be a great finish. The Travelers, like we keep saying, it's always a pretty fun time. It's not a crazy, crazy tournament, but still get some big names out there, get to see a lot going on, and it's always a nice little break in the action right after the US Open. But we will see. And those are our predictions for this year's Travelers Championship of 2024. Guys, it was a lot of fun. Talked a lot of US Open, Bryson DeChambeau claiming his second major, a lot of big names kind of faltering and not really living up to the expectations. But that is golf. And we will see how the rest of this weekend unfolds in Cromwell, Connecticut. Three rounds to go at the Travelers Championship. But that's going to do it for Tucker Austin and Chris Corino. I'm Will Talent. Thank you so much for tuning in for this edition of On the Green, a production of WFUV Sports.